That last song we sang, I appreciated that. There was a line that stuck out to me that said, "The being he gave us, death cannot destroy." Think about that. Death has no hold on us because of the resurrection. It's a precious thought. Thankful to be here, and once again, I appreciated so much the service so far, the devotional, the Sunday school, the discussion, and there's just so much we can take from what we looked into already. This morning, I grappled for the last while with what to speak on this morning, and I was still kind of rolling around what I spoke about 2 weeks ago about our work and our worship and how that goes together and how God is at the center of that in our lives. And all that we do, our work and our worship can be sacred or it can be profane or secular, depending on our intent. And what is at the top or at the pinnacle of our purpose in our efforts? What is the driver? What is the motivator behind what we do? So I was kind of still grappling with that and had to ask myself the question, is it in fact God that is there? Or is the driver maybe the next dollar? Or maybe it's some form of power. Or for many, it's the drive for fame. First Samuel 16, verse 7 says, this is when Samuel was there choosing a new king. Saul had fallen, and Samuel went there to choose a new king from Jesse's sons, and the first one came walking out, and he said, this is it. And God had to reply to that. He said, the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him, for the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Psalm 147, verse 10 and 11 says, he delighteth not in the strength of the horse. He taketh not pleasure in the legs of a man or his appearance. The Lord taketh pleasure in them that fear him, in those that hope in his mercy. The title I've given this morning is The Greatness of God Versus the Smallness of Man. And I hope I can kind of bring it together. You can follow my train of thought as I go down through this. So I was still kind of, my mind was back there and I was still thinking about that. And then there was the mission to the moon that was going on, the Artemis II mission that we've been watching for the last while, and the incredible feat that was from the launch to the splashdown. And to think that humans can travel hundreds of thousands of miles through space in a tiny capsule about the size of a minivan that was launched with one of the most powerful rockets in Florida. And 10 days later, after all those miles, re-enter back into the atmosphere and gently splash down in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California. So we watched all that, and of course there was a lot in the news about that and a lot of hype, and it's incredible. So we can look at the mission and the miles they traveled and the technology and the study and the years of preparation that went into that mission. And it's awe-inspiring. We go, wow, it's incredible that man can do that. And it is. It's something else. But I had to go beyond that a little bit, way beyond that. And I had to think that the only reason that a mission like that is even remotely possible is because of the order, the precision, and the predictability of the creation. Without that, there would be no way that a mission like that could happen. And it is because of that order and that predictability and the precision, like we heard about on Wednesday evening, that those Bibles can fly into North Korea or float there on the tide, however that happens. God set the world in motion from creation, and it is absolutely perfect in its timing and its predictability. So for the believer, it should move us when we see what man has done. We need to go beyond that and think about why he was able to do what he did. Not only the accomplishments of man, but the awesomeness of our Creator God. So I had that. And then at the same time was Easter last weekend. And we studied Easter and we heard about it and we sang about it. And to think about that of God, the Creator, that created the universe, coming down and dwelling among men and taking on the form of flesh and dying at their hands and being resurrected. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son for us. In the same week, we witnessed some of the greatest achievements of man and also the greatest gift man ever received through the death and resurrection of Christ. What to you was more inspiring? Were you all wrapped up in the mission around the moon? Or was the awe of the resurrection more real? Turn to Psalm Chapter 8. That's where my mind went. Psalm chapter 8, we'll read the whole psalm. It says, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies. That thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, yea, and the beasts of the field, the fowl of the air and the fish of the sea, and whatsoever passeth through the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. Verse 6. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands, and thou hast put all things under his feet. That happened back in Genesis. We heard about that this morning. God put Adam in the garden and he gave him dominion over his creation. And one thing that has happened over and over again, and it happened after the fall, is when fallen man is in a position of dominion and power, he always has the tendency to get the bit in his teeth and run away with it and tries to be like God, which is the original sin that Satan presented Eve with. You can be like God. It happened again a little later in Genesis at the Tower of Babel. They wanted to build that tower to become closer to God. I would like to look at just a few of some of man and his greatest achievements over history, and these are just a few I picked out. And I wanted to say in the outset, this topic, I'll have to say, was super intimidating to even look into as far as the greatness of God. And I know that I will hardly even scratch the very surface of what it is, but we'll make an attempt. So thinking of man in his greatest achievements, back in the 18th and 19th century, they learned to harness electricity. In 1879, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb after thousands of failed attempts. And we know and we appreciate electricity and what it brings into our homes, and our lights are on and our speakers work, and it's incredible. It changed the course of history. Then there was medicine. Penicillin was discovered in 1928 by a Scottish bacteriologist, Alexander Fleming. The vaccine, discovered in 1796 by English physician Edward Jenner, and it was the original vaccine was for smallpox. And it was smallpox was an epidemic in those times, and they said they didn't start to count their children, didn't start to count their families till they had gone through and survived smallpox, because they just died like flies. And this Edward Jenner discovered vaccine through study, and also was huge in the course of history and health. Fourth one I have is the miracle of flight, discovered by the Wright brothers in 1903, and that is something we all enjoy today. I love flying. We hop on a plane and we can be across the world in hours, across the country. The fastest plane is the American X-15, capable of speeds up to Mach 6.70, or over six times the speed of sound, which is 8,273 kilometers per hour. Say, wow. Imagine that. The invention of computers and the internet and AI, it's a world we live in. The first computer was back in the 1945 actually, but it started to develop in the 1960s more. The first computer occupied about 1,800 square feet and weighed over 30 tons and contained more than 17,000 vacuum tubes. Now we walk around with a little supercomputer that fits in a small pocket. There's humanoid robots that walk around. And there's the fear that they will someday be smarter than humans and annihilate the human race. Is that something to worry about? The most powerful bomb, developed by the Soviet Union in 1961, was named the Tsar Bomba. It was a thermonuclear weapon that created a fireball approximately 5 miles wide and destroyed everything within 100 kilometers radius. Approximately 3,800 times more powerful than the atomic bomb dropped in Hiroshima, Japan. Can you imagine that? They never did use it because it was too dangerous, but they did detonate one. Seventh one I have is the tallest building in the world, the Burj Khalifa, and I don't know if maybe some of you have seen that, if you've flown through Dubai, I never have. but it was built in and around 2009. It is 2,717 feet tall. Would be roughly 4.5 times taller than the Calgary Tower. Didn't do the exact math on that, but I know the Calgary Tower is 626 feet. Then there's the longest bridge in the world, which is over in China, which is 164.8 miles long, suspended. I think it's a train bridge. Then there's the highest bridge in the world, also in China, which is 2,051 feet above the valley floor. The last one I have is the first landing on the moon, which was Apollo 11 mission in 1969. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first humans to land on the lunar surface. Armstrong famously declared, "That's one small step for a man, but one giant leap for mankind." And now, 50-some years later, we have the Artemis II mission. And I think they said they flew 595,000 miles, something like that. I may not have that exact. But it's amazing. It's amazing what they can do, what man can do. And we're amazed at the visible accomplishments. There's footage of all of it. There's cameras on board. There's the camera shot of looking back through the window and the sliver of earth, and it's all there. That's things we can see. And that's what impresses us so much, is we can actually see it. But it's the things we can't see that are more impressive. Now I'd like to turn to Isaiah chapter 40. I'm going to begin in verse 12. This is God, "Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance. Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being his counselor, hath taught him? With whom took he counsel, and who instructed him, and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed to him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as a small dust of the balance. Behold, he taketh up the isles as a very little thing. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts are of sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. To whom then will ye liken God, or what likeness will ye compare unto him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold, and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblation, chooseth a tree that will not rot. He seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Have ye not known? Have ye not heard? Hath it not been told you from the beginning? Have ye not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in. That bringeth the princes to nothing, he maketh the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted, yea, they shall not be sown, yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth. And he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. To whom then will ye liken me, or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things? That bringeth out their host by number, he calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, not one faileth. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. And I love this chapter, these verses. It paints a picture of who God is. And his description here, imagine, when we go down over all the things that man has accomplished in on the earth and in space, and you imagine God, and he holds the earth in his hand, the whole world, and all that harnessed electricity, all them those lines that are crisscrossing the earth is dwarfed by a single bolt of lightning. And he is there, and I just had to think about it. Him holding the earth, and it says he measures out the heavens with a span, measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, weighed the mountains in scales and hills in a balance. This stuff is just tiny to him. All the penicillin and every other man-made medicine is absolutely useless against man's greatest sickness, which is sin. And that is where Easter and the shed blood of Christ comes in. Only by the blood of Christ. That is the remedy. All the vaccine cannot inoculate man against the infection of sin. The best and fastest airplane pales in comparison to our omnipresent Creator. It can take us places really fast, but we'll only ever be one place at one time. God is everywhere, all the time. The fastest and most powerful supercomputer will never be able to create life. Artificial intelligence is only man-made intelligence that will never be able to read the thoughts and the intents of the human heart. It can read algorithms, and it can pattern, but it'll never be able to know what you're thinking, actually. Just like the Tower of Babel, God could scramble things so bad that technology would fail and humanity would be right back to square one. He understands the thoughts and the intents of the hearts of the most powerful and influential man in the world. He knows exactly why Donald Trump does what he does, Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, Benjamin Netanyahu, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, every man that thinks they're so powerful. He understands exactly, and he knows exactly the biggest intent and the smallest intent of every heart on the face of the earth. And thinking of God in his greatness, we think of the magnitude, the incomprehensibility is another word that is used of God, but that same God can come in and he knows exactly what is going through your mind right now. And he knows exactly why you came here this morning. He knows if our worship is real. He knows if the work we do is an act of worship or if we're chasing something else. He knows exactly why you dress like you do. He knows exactly why you listen to the music you do. Why you act like you do in every single way. That God that created the universe is massive in that way, and he is also within every one of us. It's he understands our hypocrisy. if it is there. We can pull the wool over men's eyes because men see the visual and we read the visual. And by their fruits we'll know them, it says. And there is a certain amount of that we can understand, but God sees it clearly. I'd like to read a couple of verses in Hebrews chapter 4. Verse 12 and 13. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. There again, he is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. He knows the thoughts before we think them. The most powerful nuclear bomb pales in comparison to the wrath of God when it is poured out. And we see his hand move in natural disasters, in earthquakes, in hurricanes, in tornadoes, hailstorms, fires, grasshoppers. They all remind us over and over again how small and insignificant man is in comparison to our great Creator God. You think of God holding the earth in his hand, and there's a reason behind what he does, but when there's a tornado or an earthquake, and he sees all that happen, and he sees the effect of it, and he sees how man react to that, and there is some that react right, and there is some that react wrong, and they rise up push back, and they hate him for it. And there is men that are changed by that. The tallest skyscraper will never bring us into a relationship with God. In fact, the relationship with God begins at the lowest place, which is at the foot of the cross. Imagine God's view of the Tower of Babel way back then. There again, you paint a picture of God holding the earth in his hand, and all of a sudden this little thing starts rising up off the one side, and he looks at it and is like, hey, what are they doing down there? He said, let's go down and see. So they went down and they seen exactly what they were doing. And he put a stop to that because of the intent of why they were building it. The longest and highest bridge will never be able to span the great gulf that is fixed between heaven and hell. When the rich man was there and he seen Lazarus across, there was no way that he could cross that gulf that was fixed. There is no human possible way except through Christ. No spectacular future space mission will ever get man to heaven. It may land man on the moon and eventually Mars, if God allows that. That's where they have their sights set. They want to be able to live on Mars or live on the moon. And that is the intent of the secular man in his pursuit in the denial of the Creator. And I've often wondered, why in the world would you ever want to live on Mars? Why would you ever even want to think that way? But man does not want, in his denial of God, there's a denial of accountability. But if you think about it, and if you understand to a small degree the incomprehensibility of God and the smallness of what he created in his sight, Mars is like right there. That loop they just did around the moon was like going through the drive-thru. Not a big deal. (Clears throat) read a couple verses in 2 Peter, closing. Second Peter 3, verse 13 and 14. Nevertheless, we according to his promise look for a new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for such things, be diligent that ye may be found of him in peace, without spot and blameless. And then over in Revelation 21, the first five verses says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. You know, Elon Musk and whoever else wants to live on Mars, they can have it. I'll take this here. I'll take the new heaven and the new earth any day. Where God is, where righteousness is. The challenge I want to leave with us, in all that we do, let's keep a proper view of who we are in God's eyes as we continue to discover and to try and understand the greatness of our Creator. God bless.